Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is wonderful, and we love our video streaming. Willie Donick, D-Mace are here as well. How we doing?
Doing wonderful. What's going on, everybody? Beautiful day outside. We got some good football last night, for the most part, close games, but you know, ready to talk some Titans, and we get a chance to talk to Clark Lee later on today, too.
Whew. Oh, boy.
Boy, oh, boy.
Crossroads.
Yes, big time, big time.
Yeah, tough day for the Doors on Saturday, falling to Kentucky. We'll also chat with Tim Hasbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, in 1 hour. Because I've got some questions for Tim as it relates to the Tennessee Titans, and that's where I want to start. Short show yesterday due to the Preds doubleheader. So I felt like we couldn't...
That didn't go so well, by the way.
Yeah. No. There's not
good
a whole
thing
lot
it's
of,
not the regular season.
Not a whole lot of defense being played in this town.
I get the we want the puck, we want to go forward, play, you know, but you do have to play a little. There was a lot of funky bounces, a lot of typical preseason on the penalty kill, a lot of very young players playing on the road, but I don't think that's exactly what they had in mind there. Hopefully it'll be tomorrow that it looks a lot better. The more familiar names, I think, tend to play in the home preseason games. So that'll be interesting to see. Maybe it's a little cold water in the face today. Okay, we got some work to do here.
Season is back. Yeah, Preds head back to Nashville and continue the preseason tomorrow evening. But since we had a short show yesterday, I feel like we didn't get to get our full feelings out. Our listeners didn't get to, you know, thoroughly vent. So we'll continue our Titans reaction Monday on a Tuesday. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. So, you know, I still want to continue to break down the nuances of the game on Sunday. Things that went wrong. We talked a lot yesterday about the secondary. How the secondary continues to hurt the football team because, one, they cannot play clean. It was constant flags, and you just gifted the Cleveland Browns several first downs because it was either PI calls or holding calls, so on and so forth. We talked about the offensive line, and I want to continue to get into all of those nuances because I think that all of those things are important. But just kind of reflecting and looking back on the last, let's say, year of the Tennessee Titans franchise, the Titans have lost 9 of their last 10 games, going back to last season. Mm-hmm. The Titans are 1-7 since they fired John Robinson. And that one win came off of a walk-off field goal in overtime. Look, a win's a win. You're going to take it. Like, just because it happened in overtime, just because it was a three-point win, a win is a win. But I don't think that there's been a whole lot of confidence in this team this entire season. I mean, you look at the offensive line. The offensive line was an issue last year. The offensive line continues to be probably the most, you know, the biggest concern for this football team going into this season. You know, secondary was an issue last year. Well, the secondary continues to be an issue. I mean, the offense was one of the worst in the National Football League last year, and now the offense still ranks 31st in the NFL. The only team with worse total offensive numbers than you do is the New York Jets, who lost Aaron Rodgers in the first 5 minutes of the season. John Robinson is no longer to blame here. You can talk about the bad drafts and how they're still feeling the effects of it. I understand that, but it's not John Robinson's fault that, you know, you went out and you got a backup left tackle and he went one-on-one with Myles Garrett and lost every single time. You know, it's not John Robinson's fault that you have the 31st ranked offense in the league. You fired your offensive coordinator and got another one. The only thing that has continued to be a persistent problem, or is the, I'd rather say, common denominator amongst these consistent problems, is Mike Vrabel. So at what point do we have to look at Mike Vrabel and say, maybe you might be the problem?
You're going to have to start doing it pretty soon here. Now, we don't want to completely, you know, go into Armageddon, you know, Armageddon is coming. We got to, you know, do all of this.
And it's easy to do.
Yeah, it's easy to do, people. I understand it. It's easy to do, but it's not the end of the world. But you do make a good point, Caroline. First it was, oh, it's the GM. And then, oh, it's the offensive coordinator. Well, the GM and the offensive coordinator are gone. And then, oh, it was this guy or that guy. Well, you get rid of players that were hurt and injured and constantly injured, and guys that were, you know, what if Vrabel called them repeat offenders in regards to, you know, injuries. So you got rid of all of those guys, and you're still at a point where we're questioning your offensive line, we're questioning your secondary, we're questioning a quarterback. Hell, we're questioning just about everything not named defense. Defensive line, let's say that. We're questioning everything not named defensive line. Oh, and place kicker. Those are the two things we're
Nick
not.
Folk,
yes,
all right.
Nick Folk, we're not questioning those two things.
I'll give them credit for Nick Folk.
Exactly. But everything else, we're questioning. And when is it going to come a point where, you know, we start looking at the person that's in charge? Not Amy, but Vrabel. Again, I think Vrabel's a good coach. I really do. But even good coaches have that crossroad. Is the voice in the locker room getting stale? Now, every coach goes through this, and you got to find a way to reinvent yourself. You got to find a way to freshen up your message. I don't know if that's exactly what's going on, but with the injuries that they've had, the lack of depth that they've had, the inconsistent play, even at times with the defensive line, we got to ask the question, like, what is going on? Is there starting to be this disconnect with the head coach and the players? Not to say they're not going to listen to them, because they are. They're going to respect. But is there a disconnect? Because I've been hearing this same voice for so long and nothing has changed. We talk about it all the time, whether you're in a relationship or whatnot. You can keep on telling me, but if I don't see things change, it's like, what am I to do? Like, eventually you're going to lose faith in what they're saying. Hell, I went through it before, you know, in relationships. So it happens to everybody and everything. So I'm wondering, is the message getting lost or is the message getting stale? Because if you look around, they complained so much, the fans did, about the offensive coordinator, about the GM. Now they're gone. Now who do you blame? I think Tim Kelly's doing a good job with what he has. So who do you look to now? You can't look to Rand Carthon. He just got here. So like you said, the common denominator is who? And again, I'm not asking for Vrabel's job. I'm not saying that. But if you got to be honest and you want to be truthful, you got to say, well, he's the only guy left. So what's going on here?
And this is the cycle of how it works.
Exactly.
In especially the NFL, but probably all sports.
All sports.
It happened with Jeff Fisher when Floyd Reese was not renewed, right? And Jeff Fisher had probably a little bit more authority, a little more say. Mike Reinfeldt, the successor to Floyd Reese, was not as, I would say, at the forefront. It was a little bit more like it is now, that Reinfeldt was kind of working alongside of Jeff Fisher rather than Floyd, who hired Jeff Fisher as an unknown young head coach. You know, there was a little different dynamic there. Just like we knew when they made this move that Vrabel would be a little bit more in a different position, even though they preached the collaboration and everything. I think everybody believes that Mike Vrabel is the guy running the show, and I think he knows the old saying, right? The higher you go up on the flagpole, the higher the greater the wind blows, right? He knows the buck stops with him. He's a big boy, right? So I think how they respond on Sunday is going to tell us a lot. Everybody is going to have a dud somewhere in here. They're 1-2. If they were 0-3, I think it would be really red alert kind of stuff. The fact that they are still hanging around in there puts a lot in this. We knew that the first part of the schedule was going to be challenging. It's going to be challenging. I think if they can hang around, that, you know, that they're about what we thought they would be. But if they lay another egg on Sunday, then I think there's a lot of questions that have to be asked. The way that they looked on Sunday. But look, we have to look and see what they bring to the table against a really good team that needs to win. On Sunday, the Bengals coming in at 0-2, they're like, hey, we got to catch up. We got to get back into this thing. So you're going to see a hungry Bengals team.
And I think you could look at it, you know, hey, you're 1-2. It's not the end of the world. The Jags look pretty rough themselves. I mean, the Colts,
there's a lot of teams struggling
in the division. You know, the division is still there for the taking. I'm not saying that you just completely scrap the season, move on, fire the coach, get rid of the quarterback. We're starting over. Woohoo, go Titans. I'm not saying that in the slightest. But I do think that, you know, in that 1-2, in these three games, the three-game sample size that we do have, it hasn't breeded a whole lot of confidence. If that was a Browns game that you lose in the last second because the Browns just got the ball last and you battled hard and you looked good and the offense held up against that stout defensive line and your pass rush was able to get to Deshaun Watson, I think we could step away from that game and say, hey, look, yeah, you lost that game, but man, we feel really good about this team. This team looked tough. This team held up. They had a good game plan. I don't know how much you can really take away from that Browns game that really breathed.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. I mean, it was done. It snowballed, and yet I still think that in the closing minutes of the first half and the opening minutes of the second half, as Michael Lombardi on his podcast, the GM Shuffle, likes to say, the middle eight.
Uh-huh.
And I never thought of it that way, but the middle eight is, I mean, 60 minutes. All 60 minutes are important.
Yeah.
Right. We get too fun sometimes. Oh, the middle eight. Ooh, the middle eight. But I see his point, right? That was a game where they lost it in the middle eight. They're in the game, just like they always seem to be hanging around. And they screwed up the end of the first half. They come out in the second half, and they had a bad offensive possession, and then they allowed the Browns to come right down and score, and the game's over. Mm-hmm. Sayonara. You know, if it's a little different, they pop one in there at the end of the first half, come out in the second half with the ball, and build momentum, might be a different game. So in the league, there's only a few plays can do it, and we're so used to them finding ways to stay in games, it's unusual to see them just unravel like that. And so it scares everybody. It's like, wait a minute, what are we doing? It shakes your confidence. That's where Mike Vrabel in the past, I think, has been good, because his groups usually have a belief mm-hmm. that what they will do, what they're doing, will work. And so that's challenged here when you have a game like that.
Demas, you bring up the message, mm-hmm. how the message just might be getting stale. And unfortunately, I think we may have heard that from one of the horse's mouths on Sunday. We'll react to what Jeffrey Simmons had to say on Sunday evening coming up next. And of course, your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 1025-1063 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays. Hey, check out the great offers for Nashville's best deals now at thegamenashville.com/deals. Deals include a half off a $20 gift card for Elliston Place Soda Shop, Campioni's Taste of Chicago, and Calabria Brick Oven Pizzeria. And there's so much more, so visit thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. Look, I know the Titans are 1-2. I get it. The season's not over. You're not scrapping everything. We're not hitting the panic button. But man, oh man, if this team has not breeded a whole lot of confidence. And the frustrating thing for me is these are not things that have suddenly just arisen. These are things that have been problems for the Tennessee Titans. The offense struggling and being one of the worst offenses in the National Football League, unfortunately, is not new. Even though you completely overhauled the offensive line. Even though you fired the offensive coordinator and brought in a new offensive coordinator. Even though you brought in DeAndre Hopkins. The offense is still struggling, and you are now 1-9 in your last 10. Mm-hmm. That's not good. So I put that on the coach, because that's the one common denominator from last season to this season. It's a new OC. It's a new general manager. It's new pass catchers, yet the offense is still struggling, and the team still struggles to win games. But Demas, you bring up how the message may have gotten stale, and I think you may have hit the nail on the head. Because Jeffrey Simmons was asked about that in the locker room after the Browns lost, and this is what Jeffrey Simmons had to say.
I mean, but at the same time, that's getting old. You know, it's time to actually do it. You know, we've been hearing that message every week. I mean, now it's time for us to actually do it. I mean, talk about it so much. We got to do this. We got to do that. But, you know, it's a mindset. Like, it's time to win. It's time to stop having the same, you know, things over and over again. We got to play better, you know, whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, like I said, you know, I'm a winner. I like to win. So it's time to just put it together and start winning.
So he's talking about the message of got to coach better, got to play better. So
but
it's getting old.
I'll tell you what I hear in that. I hear a leader trying to show accountability there. I did not hear a tone of the message is getting stale. The coach doesn't know what he's talking about.
He said the message is getting old.
I think the message is getting old that I heard a player saying, we got to play better. Like, it's on us. That's what I heard. I don't know how you would interpret that. I know this. If you lose Jeffrey Simmons in that room, like, Jeffrey Simmons is a heart and soul guy of the team. Like, if he's not bought in, you're in trouble. I heard a guy that's bought in that really wants to win there. Maybe you guys heard differently. You know, I was listening for tone more than exact words. You can probably, you know, it's just like a quote taken out of context. If you see it in print, or if, you know, somebody texts you something, you know, you've had that text on your phone saying, ooh, what does this mean?
Yeah.
And then you talk to the person, it's not nearly as bad as you thought it was, or maybe it's worse than you thought it was. I heard a player trying to be accountable there. I just thought he didn't think they played very well.
Well, I guess you can go either way on this. You know, we could potentially start, we're seeing what can become. It's a crack that becomes a crater if this thing doesn't turn around. The crack is Simmons saying, yeah, you know, enough with the talking. We hear it all the time. Enough with it. We hear the coaches saying, we hear other players saying it. Enough with it. We got to play. We got to go out there. We can bump our gums all we want to, but if we're not going out there and picking up W's, then it means nothing. So to me, it's a crack. Small crack, but it's a crack. And if you don't repair that crack and you continue to go deeper and deeper, that pressure is going to cause that crack to get even bigger. And you're going to find yourself in a situation that you were in last season where you're on a 3, 4, 5, 6 game losing streak. He is telling us that he's frustrated with what's going on. They're frustrated with what's going on. And it's not just – here's the deal, and I could be completely wrong on this. If you go ask the offensive players, they probably wouldn't say that. Offensive players wouldn't say that. Defensive players are getting tired now. I've seen it. Been there. Done that. Seen it. This organization and the organization that I was with after I left here. The defense starts getting frustrated like, damn, we doing everything we can and y'all can't score points? Y'all can't put points on the board consistently? When you have a 3-and-out, all right, we're cool. Let's go get it. Boom. You have another 3-and-out. Defense like, all right, yeah, all right. You get another one. Defense coming back off like, damn.
It wears on them. Yeah.
Are y'all, what are you, y'all putting us in a position where I don't care how good we are, eventually we're going to give up some points. Why? Because we're on the field.
You don't feel
too
like
long.
You have any margin for
exactly.
Error. Exactly.
So what I'm saying is, I don't consider it a problem now, but if it doesn't change, he won't be the last person that says this. He said it. He's a leader on that team. So he's able to verbalize it. He's able to do that. But eventually, if it doesn't change, there's going to be things coming out of that locker room. Players may not say it, but reporters are going to start reporting it.
Yeah, but let's compare what he said to Justin Fields last week. Mm-hmm. And Davante Adams for the Raiders after the game. That was a lot more blatant. Is what we're doing working? Like, it was a serious questioning.
He blamed the coaches.
Fields absolutely did, and then walked it back, and then they had a disaster in Kansas City. I mean, an absolute embarrassment. And I didn't hear anything close to that with Jeffrey Simmons. If he's just saying the message is we got to play better, well, that's a very simple message. That's not saying, hey, our scheme isn't working, or they keep saying to play this defense, we need to play a different way. There was nothing like that. I mean, that was just a basic, we got our butts kicked. We got to do better than that. We're better than that.
But leaders,
I see your point on the, it wears on a defense going into a game thinking you got to hold the team to 13. That's tough. That's a lot to shoulder. It's like a pitcher who's playing for a team that can't score and knowing, look, if I give up one home run, we could lose 1-0 because my team can't score. Like, it's there are teams like that, right?
Yeah, and I get that, but here's the thing. those guys that, you know, whether it was Justin Fields or who was the other guy that said something?
Adams. Devontae Adams. He said, you know, we don't have a very good winning exactly. culture here.
So whether it's those two guys saying it that way or Jeffrey Simmons saying it this way, they're all saying the same thing. Again, I've always said this, and this was told to me a long time ago by my parents, my mom. Listen, I can say what I need to say. I can call you, I don't know, the worst thing in the world. But I can do it in such a nice way that you start to think like, well, maybe because of what I am doing, I am that, what he's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, or I can come at you demonstrative and you know, put up your dukes and you're ready to fight because you're combative. Well, Jeffrey, the other two guys came with a combative, you know, like, let's go. Jeffrey Simmons did it in a way like he just kind of soothed you. He was like, hey, listen, we're just tired of the message mm-hmm. is getting stale. We just got to go out there and play and win. Well, Jeffrey's saying the same thing those two, but he's just saying they're different, you know?
And I think I'm not saying in the slightest that clip from Jeffrey Simmons is alluding to the fact that Mike Vrabel has lost the locker room. I'm not saying that.
No, I'm not.
I'm not alluding
Jeffrey
to the fact that.
Jeffrey is tactful in what he's – Jeffrey is doing it in a veteran leadership tactful way.
Right.
Those other two guys did it because they were frustrated and they didn't care.
And I think that Jeffrey Simmons is frustrated.
Yeah.
And you know what? I hope he's frustrated. Mm-hmm. You've lost 9 of your last 10 games. You should be frustrated. And I think that he's telling us, like, look, at a certain point, got to play better, just isn't enough. At a certain point, we have to do things differently. At a certain point, your message after every single loss when we get our butts whooped, we don't want to hear it anymore. It's falling on deaf ears. We want our message and our approach to be different, because if you continue to do the same thing over and over, and if you continue to preach the same message over and over and you get the same results, then you're just breeding a culture of frustration and resentment. And I don't think that – I don't want that. You don't want that. Mike Vrabel doesn't want that. Nobody in that locker room wants that. So I think that Jeffrey Simmons is simply just saying, look, the message, you've got to play better. Like, we got to do it. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, telling us to play better doesn't make us play better. We have to go out there and actually play better.
They aren't that talented. That's the reality, right? You listen to any show. We've talked about power ratings all summer. They're in the 20s. They don't have much margin for error. They're not going to go and overwhelm anybody they play when you get down to it. Unless they're playing a team that has their quarterback hurt mm-hmm. and decimated with injuries and they stay healthy. I mean, these are things that have to go right. So I think this is what they're in, right? If they don't play up to their capability, close to it, consistently each week, they're not going to win. They're not mm-hmm. They're not the most talented team in the league, in a league that is very even, right? They have ways that they can hang in there. But this is the reality check here, right? They don't have their act together. They're going to get beat no matter who they're playing, especially against a team like the Browns, who they do have a little more talent, especially mm-hmm. if their quarterback gets his act together, which he played a pretty good game mm-hmm. on Sunday. The Browns' defense is moving right up to the top of the list. Yeah. They've dominated three teams now.
And let's continue on that thought, that the Titans just simply aren't talented enough, that the Titans just simply don't have good enough players, because you are not wrong in the slightest, Willie. But what I would continue getting into that coming up next is, you know, whose shoulders does that fall on? We'll continue the conversation coming up next and your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We are brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us in 30 minutes. Eager to hear Tim's evaluation of the Titans on Sunday against the Browns. Willie, before the break, Willie, you said that this team just is not talented enough. And Willie, you are right.
But we knew that. This is not me assessing it after three games. This is an assessment that we had really all summer. So we shouldn't be surprised that they had a game like this, especially against the defense they played.
And I want to continue to get into that, but I want to get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Scott is in Mount Juliet and has a thought on the Titans. What's up, Scott?
Oh, there is plenty of blame as to why they're not talented enough. And it goes back to John Robinson, number one, whiffing on every high draft pick. You had, you know, A.J. Brown and Jeffrey Simmons, which are grand slams, and then whiff on every first and second rounder between those guys and McCreary. You can't, you know, Isaiah Wilson, Dylan Raidens, Caleb Farley, you know, even Treylon Burks, you know, he may be a good player, but, I mean, he's not contributed up to the level of his draft. And even Skoronski, who I expect great things from, you know, he's missed half his games already, too. So, you know, drafting has been a concern. You know, Ben Carson comes in. You can fix some things in free agency, and what do? We sign Andre Dillard. You know, he did a good job of shoring up every other unit. You know, Murphy Bunting and DeAndre Hopkins and adding guy Arden Key, adding guys here. We sign guys who aren't good enough to start anywhere else on the OL. And then over the last couple of years, we've also given contracts to backups here that aren't given, you know, good enough to way overpay them, and then complain about the cap and not having enough cap space.
Yeah. Thank you for your call, Scott. All very fair points. Appreciate your call. Good call. There is a good bit of truth to that. There's lingering effects of bad drafts. Like, the secondary looked rough. Could have used a first round corner in Caleb Farley. Offensive line looks rough. Could have used an Isaiah Wilson and a Dylan Raidens. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, you can't continue to cry over spilled milk, and you have to just continue to fix the mistakes that were made by the person who had your job ahead of you.
But that,
so
that's,
I can't
but
put
it's
Andre
hard.
Dillard it, on John Robinson.
No, but also Rand Carthon was limited in his budget. Uh-huh. Like, look, they chose. You mentioned it yesterday, D-Mace. There's a reason they asked Kevin Byard to take a pay cut, right? Yeah. He's at a stage of his career where percentages, forget about the person, the individual, how much you believe in Kevin Byard. He's at the age where guys start slowing down a little bit. It's harder to be dominant. Mm-hmm. They kept him at his price. He didn't want to do it. Some people did, like Hunter Smith for the Vikings, been around a long time. He did take the pay cut, right? Mm-hmm. Aaron Jones in Green Bay took the pay cut. There are guys that do it, respected guys. Mm-hmm. Byard didn't want to do it, so that lowers your budget of what you can do with the offensive line. Same thing with Derrick Henry. Utmost respect. He's at an age where you might lose a step here and there. We'll see how it plays out over 17 games, but Rand Carthon's options were limited. And so he did the best he could, and now there's a lot riding on Dillard being better than he was in the first three games, right? It is alarming how poorly he's playing. That was extreme on Sunday, but your left tackle's got to give you something better than that. But I'm just saying, when you whiff on Isaiah Wilson and, you know, Skoronski's hurt, you know, it's not like you can just go pluck guys off the grocery store and plug guys in at that position. That's
tough.
Yeah,
you can. It's tough. And you know, when you're trying to do that with the offensive line, it's tough because you don't have enough time during the offseason in jail, enough practice time, and then you get in the game. It's sort of like it's trial by error until everybody figures out what's going on. The communication is the way it needs to be. And right now they're still in a phase, especially now that Peter's not playing. You don't got Nicholas playing to be, you know, you're getting back, what, in two games somewhere around here. But not only are we sort of playing musical chairs with these offensive linemen in a sense because of injury suspension. Also, these guys haven't had time to gel either. The communication is off completely with all five of them, it seemed like at times. And from a talent standpoint, they're good enough to play in the NFL, but they're not good enough to be starters.
Yeah.
I will repeat that. They're good enough to play in the NFL, but they're not good enough to be starters, 17-game starters. And you can only go because the three you give me that you know, Robinson whiffed on, I can give you four that he didn't whiff on. You know, so we can play this game back and forth like, okay, he whiffed on this guy. Well, he got an all-pro in Kevin Byard at one point. He whiffed on this guy. Well, he got Jeffrey Simmons. You know, he whiffed on this guy. I can name another guy that he went out and either drafted or brought in.
Nobody bets 1,000.
Exactly.
Right,
so nobody's going to sit here and be 100 for 100. You're going to be somewhere in that 60-70% range as far as hit and miss. But the problem still remains with this team is that because of all of that, it's going to take them a few years to build this roster back up. Because essentially when you're firing your GM, it's saying we're starting over from an evaluation standpoint. Mm-hmm. We're not starting over as a team, like revamping a whole team and starting over. No, we're starting over from an evaluation because there's somebody else new in that seat. Mm-hmm. So now I got to evaluate. That's why Ram, when he said, listen, I still, you know, when it comes to the quarterback, I'm still doing my evaluations at the beginning of the year when he said that. Because he knew the clock started over in regards to evaluating the roster. Now this, I think we're really going to see how this roster takes form. Not necessarily this year, because there's not much they can do this year. There's just not much. There's not like a plethora of all pros and pro bowlers are sitting out just waiting for calls. It's just not that way, especially from an offensive line standpoint. It's going to start taking form next offseason. And I know that's so far down the line and that people don't want to think about it right now. And I get it. But I'm just trying to set this all up. It's going to be next offseason where you start to see hopefully that change in philosophies and what they want to do as far as evaluating players. Right now, they are who they are. They don't have much depth at no position other than the defensive line. Let me say that again. They have no depth on the team other than the defensive line.
And even the defensive line didn't really blow me away against the Browns.
Yeah, but that's more of a – that's not the norm for the defensive line. That's more of a –
And they still didn't run. Yeah, they stopped the run all three games.
You take that game and you put it over here. And you hope that it doesn't happen again.
That's the exception.
Yeah, exactly. But for every place else, you have a receiver go down. You have a – don't please don't let a tight end go down, even though Chig – damn, Chig, show up, man.
Catch a ball.
Goodness.
I'm concerned about him.
I've been on that Chig train. Come on, dude. You got the talent. Do it. I don't know what it is. You got to. But, Lord, don't let nobody go down at the tight end position. And, Lord forbid, they can't have another injury at the offensive line position. They can't. They have no depth anywhere but the defensive line and the running back position. That's it.
You get what you pay.
But Chestnut's out, so you can only really go too deep.
Yeah.
You know?
You get what you pay for, and the Titans are 26th in the league in terms of cash spent. So if you want to go cheap on the left tackle, that's fine. But mm-hmm. you have to expect that your offensive line is going to struggle and your quarterback's going to get destroyed when you go cheap on the left tackle.
But why is it cash spent? It's because there's dead money. There's still some dead money that accounts for some of that, right?
Yeah, but every team in the league has dead money as well.
But some have a lot more than others. Like the Saints have set a record, I think, for how much dead money you can
try to swallow.
There's a lot of I mean, you do have to pay the fiddler at some point.
But
they ate money when they cut, you know, Bud Dupree and some of the guys they cut.
LeJuan and those guys. Yeah, but it wasn't. I mean, it is what it is. But I think from an offensive line standpoint, I think they envision, okay, Skoronski, with that Dillard and Skoronski combination, they would play off each other well. If, you know, Dillard needs some help, then we can slide the protection, help him a little bit, have the back come out and chip. It just now that Peter's injured and, well, he had surgery, mm-hmm. and we don't know if he's going to be back this game, what they envisioned and what they wanted to happen is put on hold now. That's why they didn't – I believe that's why they didn't put him at tackle. They want to have the best five on the field, and they envision that as Peter get better, as he gets better, it helps out Dillard. And then we can also help Dillard with a tight end or back coming out to chip. But now that Peter's not in there, it looks bad.
It's It's a whole lot of hoping.
Yeah, it looks bad because Dylan Raitens, again, you're good enough to play in the NFL, but I don't know if you're good enough to be a starter.
Right back into your phones on this coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us in 15 minutes. We'll get his evaluation of a rough Titans performance on Sunday against the Browns. But before we get into Tim, let's get to you. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, breaking down where the Titans are and how they got here. Because I look at this and I say, look, you fired the general manager, you fired the offensive coordinator, you overhauled the offensive line. The offense still stinks. The offense is ranked 31st in the National Football League right now. The common denominator there is Mike Vrabel. And Willie points out what we've been told really throughout all the offseason is this team's just not very talented. Nobody really believes in your quarterback outside of the city of Nashville. Whenever it comes to power rankings, the Titans were always at the bottom because the evaluation of the roster is just not as good compared to the rest of the league. So let's get into your thoughts on that. John is on the line with a thought on Mike Vrabel. What's up, John?
So, guys, love the show. I'll go quick, add a few points. To D-Mace's point, when he says, for every one that John Robinson drafted that's good, you can name one that's bad. And I think that's what it is. It's the timing of the Isaiah Wilson pick, who's not in the league anymore. The timing of the Caleb Farley at 18, who's not playing in the league right now. And just the culmination. And if we're going to put it on talent, well, we then have to turn around and say, all right, we have to separate Vrabel the coach from Vrabel the GM and let that kind of play its course and see, all right, what talent is going to be different than his influence as opposed to JR? I mean, obviously, Rand Carthon's a GM, but we know Vrabel has a little bit more leash, and I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, thanks for your call, John. I think when it comes to patience and letting things play out, I am totally in agreeance of that with the draft. Yeah. Because the draft, it takes time. You know, your second-round pick in Will Levis, we knew he probably wasn't going to contribute to this team right away. Drafts are like a Thanksgiving meal. They take time. Mm-hmm. They take patience. They take a little TLC. Free agency signings and trades, those are like your fast food. Like you're driving through McDonald's and you're picking up chicken nuggets and french fries because you need something right now. And that's kind of what I'm looking at, less of the draft and the talent evaluation of the 2023 draft and more so of the free agent signings this year and how they have either helped or hurt this team. Like they went out, they signed Andre Dillard. We have seen through 3 weeks that Andre Dillard is just not good enough. And so that does fall on Mike Vrabel and the talent evaluation and Mike Vrabel, the GM, of what did you do to help this team this year knowing that the offensive line was an issue. Signing a backup left tackle wasn't going to help the offensive line issue.
Well, D-Mace, that's an interesting question because they, you know, like when you need something quick, you go to fast food and you know going in, look, this isn't the highest quality food, right? This is not all the nutrients that would be ideal if you went to Whole Foods or, you sat down and had a nice you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And Andre Dillard is like fast food in a way. They gambled that they could get more out of him and great bang for the buck and then said, oh, we'll take our first-round pick and we'll slide him into a guard, and ideally it'll work. It hasn't yet. Now, let's hope Skoronski is back this week, because if that lingers another week, then you got another tough front you got to block. In the Bengals, it looked pretty good with the pass rush last night. They took the Rams running game completely out, and then they teed off on Matthew Stafford. So a big challenge. Mm-hmm. But all that to say, you know, they could have you can't go and get, like, there were no great left tackles. Mm-hmm. Great left tackles do not become free agents. It was kind of a placeholder move and a calculated risk, right? The real move would have been to plug Skoronski into the left tackle, but they're hoping to get more by getting more out of Dillard in the second stage of his career and then have an ace left guard. It hasn't worked yet.
Now, they could have. Listen, let's not sort
of. Who was out there? What tackles were out there?
Let's not say they couldn't go and get it, because they were not as proactive in free agency as some other teams were.
Orlando Brown, Mike McGlinchey.
They had an opportunity. Now, regardless of how you evaluate these players, let's just say at the beginning, they had an opportunity to go get those those tackles that were starting tackles at other teams, their contracts expired, and they could have potentially signed back with their team, but they chose to sign somewhere else. I'm sure Kansas City would have loved to keep Orlando Brown Jr. I'm sure they would have. But he wanted too much money. And so they let him go. They let him walk. Cincinnati signed him. There were other tackles that were starters on other teams. They got new contracts with other teams or got new contracts with their current team. So the Titans had an opportunity to go out there and be aggressive, but they didn't.
But now, that would have cost. They would have to make other moves. They would have had to cut buyers or something like that.
I get what you're saying, Willie. But there comes a time where you either, I'm paying for what I get, basically. I've said this analogy over. You're going to pay for some good shoes or you're going to pay for some bad ones. I'd rather pay for some good shoes and pay a couple of, you know, maybe an extra $100 or $2 because my feet ain't going to hurt after about 2 weeks. I put on those bad shoes that cost $20. Oh, my feet going to be hurting and my toes going to be telling me, okay?
But you know what you get.
Exactly.
With a $20
pair of shoes. I know what I'm getting, so I shouldn't complain. Well, the Titans should have known what they were getting. I know they expected it to be a little bit better, and the season's not over with, so it's not all doom and gloom. But
It looks shaky right now.
But you get what you pay for. They went out and got Arden Key, and he's playing well. They went out and got Azeez, he's playing well.
But there are let's not
they
act
went
like
out and got said. Dillard, he's not playing well. They went out and got Hubbard, he's playing.
But sometimes it does work.
You know what? I'm not saying it doesn't work.
To get the quote-unquote bargain guy that overachieves. It does work sometimes. It's not like it's never worked before.
No, and I'm not saying it never works.
It just is not working so far.
Why go get it and cross my fingers that I hope it works rather than going out, paying the money for the guy that I know for more than likely it will work, you know? A tackle that I know, for the most part, he's going to hold his own. He may have some bad games,
but
he's going to hold his own.
That goes back to what was your goal for the season? Was it to go all in, run it back, we can win it all? That's when you go get Orlando Brown.
Well, it seemed like they were all in because they kept They kept Henry. They kept Byard.
Yes,
they kept the quarterback. They went and got D-Hop.
Yes, but they drafted Will Levis in the second round. They traded up to get him. They've drafted Malik Willis the year before. Uh-huh. They're trying to hedge. They're in between.
You can't be in between in professional sports.
But they are.
Either you're going to get it or you're
not. It's not just me saying this. It's every analyst has said that's what they've done. They're trying to split the difference between rebuilding, mm-hmm. which a lot of people think they should have done, or going all in where you're saying, go all in, but can you beat the Chiefs, the Bengals, the Bills, the Ravens, are you better than those teams, even if you go all in? Probably not. So what did they do? They went right down the middle, where they didn't mortgage the future, and they tried to say, okay, let's see if we can find a little lightning in a bottle for a good price, and maybe we found our left tackle for an inexpensive price.
Inexpensive pay.
You got to be prepared when you do that for this to happen.
I want
to
ask this question.
I was the one that said 9-8. You guys were saying 11-5.
You
guys had 11, 12 wins for this team.
I had 11 wins.
Yeah. But what did you think was going
to
happen?
Well, they still may get to 11 wins, but
they're not going to.
I don't know. They may.
Can't go 11-6 without going 1-2.
Exactly. But here's the thing. If this team, hindsight is 20/20. We all know that. Would you have rather, let's just say it, and I'm gonna pose this to Titans fans because they scream and yelled and holler, and I sort of did the same thing too. We need a pass catcher. We need another pass catcher. But I do recall me saying, give these young kids a shot. Like, give them a shot. They can play. Give them a shot. Would you rather have taken that $17 million that you're giving D-Hop, added another 5 or 6 and went in and got your tackle? Or you'd rather have D-Hop? Because I'm going to tell you this. I'd rather have that left tackle. It has nothing to do with D-Hop's ability to play this game. But if I ain't got a left tackle, I can't throw him the ball. And it's showing right now. They don't have an offensive line. They can't even get him the ball other than 5 yards here, 7 yards here. Oh, he may catch a 20-yarder, but the bulk of his catches are 5, 6, 7 yarders. Why? Because I ain't got time to throw. So I would rather have that left tackle than D-Hop, not because I don't think D-Hop can play. I know the man still can play. But he can't play if the quarterback is not getting protection. Simple. So what do you pay? That's why they pay left tackles more money than they pay wide receivers. Because if I don't get him the money, I can't get him the ball.
And I can't definitively say that because I was the one in the Bengals, what was that, the 2021 draft. I said, take Penei Sewell. Like, you need an offensive lineman. Joe Burrow is getting absolutely mauled. They take Ja'Marr Chase, and then they go to the Super Bowl. So, you know.
And you damn near got your quarterback
the
killed.
The philosophy of protect the quarterback first and then get the quarterback weapons to throw to second was probably disproved in that draft and in that year that the Cincinnati Bengals had. You know, look, the Titans needed a pass catcher. I was the one banging on the table after the draft of, really? You're going to avoid and not address one of the biggest problems on the offense in the draft? You're not going to draft a wide receiver until the seventh round? And that's no disrespect to Colton Dell, but seventh round wide receivers are much different than maybe first, second, or third round wide receivers. So they were both issues for the Titans offense. But overall, I mean, when you don't address certain positions thoroughly, then you need to acknowledge the fact that, hey, this might not work out.
The only way you can have a situation like you had in Cincinnati where go out and get Ja'Marr Chase.
Is if you have a Joe Burrow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And do the Titans have a Joe Burrow?
You have a Joe Burrow.
Well, that's why they invested the draft pick that they did to try to get the next guy. Yeah. And, I guess the Jets have Zach Wilson. That was the second pick in the draft, right? And we know that you're taking a risk every time you take the next quarterback, so we just don't know. But that's why you have to do it at some point or else you don't have a quarterback.
And I think the Jets example is a good one of, you know, a caller called in earlier and said, well, you know, you whiffed on Isaiah Wilson and then you whiffed on Dylan Raidens. Yes, but at a certain point, you have to move on and address the issue because the Jets drafted Zach Wilson with their first round pick and they realized this guy stinks. So we're going to go out and get Aaron Rodgers. We're not going to wait to really stink and then get the next best quarterback in the next draft when we have a top three pick. We're not going to do that. We're going to put the money up. We're going to put the resources forth to address the position that we need to address. Offensive line has been an issue for this team for, what, three years now? And I get it. Injuries happen. I understand that Taylor Lewan tearing his ACL and getting the concussions. I get it. It hurt this football team. But at a certain point, you just got to acknowledge the fact that your offensive line is bad and do what you can to fix it. But I want to get Tim Hasselbeck's thoughts on this. He will join us coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.